Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are picking up the pieces in association with AllFootballShirts.com. Well, that was the week that was. We were hoping for a joyous show today as we look back on our trip to Wembley and plan the next one. We were hoping that the trip to Forest would lift our spirits, but alas not. It was not the greatest week on planet Albion. However, all is not lost. We are still on course for our best ever season, and a European tour is still in our grasp. And we can also celebrate the fact that Evan Ferguson's just signed a new contract. And it's been nearly a month since the last game at the Amex, and we've got one to look forward to on Saturday, as Wolves are the visitors. And joining me today is, of course, Alan West. And it is a very warm welcome back to Nick Schrapanik. Not the greatest week, Nick, really, to be fair to say.
You could say that. Yeah, no, absolutely. I had a sort of slight sinking feeling about the week anyway. But you know, on the bright side, not only do we have a home game to look forward to, we actually got three home games to look forward to.
Yes.
Chance for revenge over Manchester United, failing Everton. Wolves with a lot less to play for after they beat whoever it was they beat the other day, and so let's try and find the positives.
Just before we started, Nick. I mean, you were talking about the positives, and you were saying how much you enjoyed the travel to Wembley.
I hate it. I hate Wembley. I once saw the Albion lose 2-0 at Arsenal and then went off to see my NFL team, the Miami Dolphins, lose 21-0 to the New Orleans Saints at Wembley. So I don't think many people have ever seen their Premier League team and their NFL team shut out on the same day. But Wembley, yuck. I was going to say, if we never have to go, then go there again, it'll be too soon. But of course, we do want to go to Wembley. But it would be nice to win. At least we avoided defeat over the 120 minutes and kept a clean sheet, which I think both firsts for us.
Well, obviously, we're obviously horribly gutted with the way that everything panned out on Sunday. But would it have been better to lose in the actual game time or rather than penalties? I mean.
Well, we could have either won in the game time as well. I mean, if you're talking about the fact that clearly the 120 minutes had an effect on the team for Wednesday night against Forest, then I'd prefer it if we'd won in the 90 minutes, let alone lost in the 90 minutes. I'll take Nick's point. Wembley is an absolute ball ache to get to. Excuse me. It's not in a nice particularly nice area. And when it was built, it was a countryside anyway. So I wouldn't have preferred we lost in 90 minutes. I'd rather we won in 90 minutes. And let's face it, as I'm sure we're about to talk about, we had every opportunity to do so. Man United had every opportunity to do so as well, but you know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? To be fair, a lot of pundits called it as a game they couldn't call, and this is going to be, you know, a 90-minute, 120 minutes, socks around the ankles, goes to penalties, you know, nerve fest, and so it seemed to be. I think the only sort of slightly surprising thing is it was that the draw was 0-0 rather than 3-3.
Nick, we were talking to John Bruin on the show last week, and he said that there might be one or two players that are going to be overawed by the occasion. And do you think that maybe there was? I mean, there was certainly players that were maybe playing within themselves a little bit. There's a little nerves taking the extra touch.
Sure about that. Possibly. I mean, possibly. I think Liverpool supporting friend of mine texted me to say how gutted he was that we hadn't beaten Manchester United, but he said that we'd lack conviction, and I think actually that was it. I don't think, I mean, everyone was talking about how great Wan-Bissaka was against Mitoma, but to me it looked like Mitoma was kind of reluctant to take him on. The great attacking power from the wings of Mitoma and March didn't really happen. So I think, you know, and my slight misgivings over the whole week actually went back to the Chelsea game, which was a great win. It was a win, but it wasn't as good as it could have been. And it took a great goal to win it. And I just had this feeling that we're a little bit going back to the Graham Potter days of, you know, making chances and missing them and then not making chances. Because undeniably, Manchester United had the better chances than we did in that game, even though we had all the play. I just think, we need to get back to that, hey, let's go, let's take chances, let's have shots. And just the reluctance to get that goal scoring shot in, or
Yeah.
inability to
Well,
do it.
that was the question I was asking, really. I mean, there was a classic example with where Mitoma had the ball. He was on the edge of the box. I can't remember who the defender was. It was in front of him. But a couple of months ago, he would have like feinted one way and taken the ball on the past him and actually got the shot away. But he basically just hesitated and hesitated, and then the chance was gone.
I think
Yeah,
the
but the thing
first
is, he
Nottingham Forest goal against us, showed the virtues of just having a go.
I mean, the point is he did have a go. He did do exactly that at Chelsea. I mean, the keeper made a decent save. It's always easy to say with hindsight, well, perhaps if he'd have lifted it, if he'd have stuck it in the other corner, if he'd have done this, if he'd have thrown the beans up in the air, see how they land, what have you. But the point is against Chelsea, he did drift past a couple of players like they weren't there. So it's not as though he's lacking in confidence. Like I say, it's Wembley Stadium. But don't forget, we've got half of that team played in the World Cup. One of them won the World Cup final. And that's a way bigger stage than, the majority have played in. So I'm not utterly convinced by the whole. We were overawed by the occasion. I mean, Manchester United, clearly they've got players who are more used to that. But, by the same token, I wouldn't say that Manchester United particularly rose to the occasion. I mean, if the boot was on the other foot, you could argue that the United played without conviction. I mean, I've heard people neutral say it was a bit of a scrappy game. Yes, there was chances, but it wasn't the free-flowing sort of quality, beautiful game fest that we were kind of expecting. It was a slight battle of attrition. I mean, don't get me wrong, they did like throwing themselves to the ground a bit, which is totally unnecessary. And
Yeah.
the likes of Manchester United, frankly, should be better than that. However, it was there was a fag paper between the two teams, and it we there is that sort of frustration of if only, if only, if only. But I think that a semi-final is actually a major achievement. It's only the third time we've ever done it. I'm delighted we did do it. If we're going to do this again next season, it's going to cost us a fortune to go on away trips, because the final wouldn't have been any cheaper. I'm just pleased
Of
that we
course,
got
there
as
would have
far
been
as
a
we
train
did.
strike.
And there would have been a train strike, so,
Just think of all those poor Manchester United fans who are going to have to go all the way from Guildford and Swanley and places by bus instead of by train.
Well, exactly. So, I'm not actually as disappointed as I could or should be. Now, if it was a case that, we've got a repeat of the Spurs scenario where we've absolutely bossed them, lost, having been nobbled out of it, then you feel a bit spiteful for it. But we're all three of us are long enough in the tooth to know that, as football fans, we know that this is what happens in football, and there's no point in howling about it. I know that we're going to talk about it again in a minute because, we'll go through the game, but the whole notion of the fact that Solly March missed and the grief that he got from some quarters on
See,
social
I've
media.
not really seen any of the
Oh,
grief,
I've
really.
believe me, I
I've
saw, believe me,
seen.
yeah, but you didn't. I did. So, it wasn't major, and the whole support behind him afterwards was very refreshing and very brightened. But believe me, there were quarters where, people were screaming dogs abuse at Solly March. And actually, I mean, this is obviously after the event, but I had to sit near people who were screaming dogs abuse at Deniz Undav just as he was taking his penalty. So, it's we've all got to have a pantomime villain. It's just incredible
I
that
was
this could
just
be one of our
amazed.
players.
I was just amazed after his Charlton experience that Solly didn't go to hit it low. I mean, you're never going to miss the goal by hitting it too low.
Well, you are, aren't
Whereas going high is a bit of a risk, especially with what happened to him at Charlton.
Well, maybe he's just, presumably they've been practicing penalties ahead of this, and they say make your mind up beforehand and stick with your decision. If you change your mind, then that causes indecision. But I mean, the other penalties, that every single one apart from Solly's was exceptional.
Well, to be fair, no, Sanchez did get his hand to one Man United one, and we sort of had that brief microsecond of joy, but No, at least we know that Solly March is consistent with his penalties. No, the some of the grief that I saw was actually about why was he taking a penalty? And you think, well, one, he was the seventh in line. Two, one of those behind him who didn't step up and volunteer also missed at Charlton, and that's Caicedo. So, you know, there's got to come a point. I mean, then
and Veltman didn't take one, and the Dutch are famously terrible at penalty shootouts.
Yeah. Veltman was next in line if Solly had scored.
Sure, so, and you had Mitoma, and you think, well, what, you know, maybe Japanese, you know, they're smarting from their World Cup exit. Well, who knows?
Well, Mitoma missed a penalty and a penalty shootout at the World Cup as well.
There you go. So, you know, everyone's got something playing on their mind. So the fact that Solly March stepped up seventh, I think it was perfectly all right. You know, you do the right thing. You start off with your best penalty taker and the rest kind of follow suit. And I don't think, apart from March's penalty, that the keeper got anywhere near our penalties.
Yeah. Apparently, that was the first time Man United had won a penalty shootout out of like the last eight, I think, or something. Stupid like that.
Okay.
It was
anyway.
Yeah,
it's because De Gea is famously terrible at saving penalties, isn't it? So,
well, he didn't
just
save
get
one
it on
either,
target,
did
boys.
He?
I didn't say one.
No, that's why. Hit the target.
Okay, well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about the game. I think largely we bossed it. I think we were pretty much the better side. I mean, United had to resort to spoiling tactics largely. I mean, they did obviously have their moments in the game, but it was just a case of us not taking the chances when they were. Like, we were taking that extra touch. It was hesitancy. You know,
I think that every accusation that you throw at Brighton, every sort of consideration as to how we played, you can actually say exactly, with the exception of the gravity whoredom, you can throw at Manchester United as well. I thought that they certainly played within themselves. They're clearly a better side than Ten Hag's first game, but they've improved. And you know, I'm not convinced they're going to give City a good game in the final, but. You know, this is the issue that we've got here now. This is the consideration we've got to look at is that we went into that game on the, as Nick said, on the back of a really good win against Chelsea. It gave them the confidence that they wanted and needed. I think I feared that they'd have played within themselves even more if we hadn't beaten Chelsea. So we played with a certain level of openness. And Manchester United, here we are, you know, keeping them at 0-0. It's another game where they haven't actually beaten us, if you're going to look at it that way. And, you know, we're sort of slightly upset. Well, we're kind of upset about it. You know, that's the level that we're at now, on the back of, you know, being having the second cheapest squad. Mm. So, you know, that's the level that we've raised ourselves to. So, you know, Yeah, it's not the free-flowing stuff we had against Chelsea, but Chelsea were truly awful. Manchester United, clearly a better side.
I think there were nerves, though, Nick. But, I mean, I think if McAllister's free kick had gone where the Spiders lived rather than the De Gea making a great save, I think we go on and win that game comfortably, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, resorting to cliche goals change games. I mean, if they go a goal down, did they change their system? It's very hard to say those things. But apart from that save that he made, De Gea made a great save from Enciso's shot.
Yep.
But apart from that, I think Sanchez was probably the busier of the goalkeeper in terms of actually having to make saves. They were doing... So, of course, you know, as we go forward, we can be caught on the break, as we know, and as Nottingham Forest showed us. But, I don't know. I wasn't aware of anybody being overawed. Just, you know, sometimes things just don't quite happen for you on the day or on the night, and you don't really know why. As you say, you know, what's more overawing for Mitoma, playing in the World Cup or playing in a semi-final at Wembley? I can't see that would really affect him or many of the others, really.
I mean, it's interesting that when Wan-Bissaka, you know, came off, that freed up Mitoma a little bit. So I've got no problem with that. You know, Wan-Bissaka did have a good game. Yes, Mitoma could have had a go at him, but you know, you play each move on its merits. You know, somewhere down the line, he just didn't feel he had him beaten. That's not criticism of Mitoma. I mean, it's how the team plays.
Okay. Well, it was a start for Enciso in this game, and again on Wednesday night. What do we make of Enciso? I can't quite work out what he actually is.
Paraguayan.
He's I think his quality is that he always wants to score a goal. And I know that De Zerbi has said, I never want to take Mittema off because he can always produce something. But if you want to have shots, Nsisi's your man. I just wonder if he looked so crestfallen when he was taken off at Wembley, didn't he? I just wonder if there's something to be said for having him always as the impact substitute, even, you know, perhaps bring him on at half time, just because, you know, he's maybe one of those players who wants to sort of stew for a half and think, I can show these people, you know, just let me on, let me have a go and show what I can do, and then does it.
I agree with that totally.
Given the option, I don't think that De Zerbi would start him normally. I mean, I don't think he'd start any of the kids, to be honest, given the option at the moment. So yes, I think he's clearly a better impact player. I mean, and we've had, you know, our history is laced with those players who's come on and made a difference to the game compared to those who start. And I start this bidding, and there's probably some that go back further, but I start the bidding with your favourite AD, Kazenga Luwalawa, who when he came on could literally turn cartwheels. No, Nsizo, yes, I agree with Nick. Nsizo is a player who just almost greedily, like he was the sort of the playing in the playground, wants to show off. He wants to do that extra trick, that extra beating of his man, because to him, football is this magic thing. And I think he's still yet to learn, and De Zerbi's kind of hinted at such. He's still yet to learn that actually football's a team game. And he's 12 years old, for God's sake. You know, he's fine. He'll come on to be something pretty special.
I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about Evan Ferguson later on, but I mean, it was a game where he was a massive miss in this game anyway. I mean, Nsizo certainly can't lead the line. He's not big enough. He's not strong enough yet to do that. And actually, when he went off, and Danny did actually move more central, it was actually we were a lot more productive, I thought, but. It was.
It depends on how you play it. It depends. I mean, because the likes of Welbeck and Ferguson can play with their back to goal, with their back to the defender, in a way that Nsizo is trying to but can't really yet. I mean, he's. Yeah. I'll say a puff of wind will take him over.
He likes to be able to see the goal from wherever he is, and so that he can draw a straight line in his mind between him and it, and run along that line like Darren Huckabee used to do.
Yeah, given the opportunity, he's what I call a goal hanger.
Well, I wouldn't even say that because I mean,
he can't be because you have the offside rule. Yeah. But
I mean, he was. I just don't think he's like Nick says. I don't think he's a starter. I don't think he's linking the play well enough. And like, I think that he's like you said, because he's playing when he's doing that, he's playing with his back to goal, and it's affecting his natural game. But I mean, you know, like we said, he's only young, and we're going to see the best of him.
Criticism doesn't really sort of amount to much at the moment, because he's having to fill in and having to do a major job, and you can then sort of like go back to the whole thing that possibly the Forest game has laid bare is the nature of the squad depth. But you know, sorry, Nsizo, he's good enough to start, but it's just knowing that we have better is probably what frustrates people.
Okay. Well, I mean, we lost. The penalties were the penalties. I mean, but the atmosphere I thought was fantastic. I thought the flags were it was just beautiful to watch. And it was just a great day out. We were in by 90 minutes of football.
You were watching from the press box, weren't you? So
yeah, it was fabulous.
Give us your view from there. Not all the people that you rub shoulders with, because we're not doing name dropping just here, but give us your view from there.
It was basically I was actually right next to the Albion fans anyway, and actually one of my great friends was actually sat just in front of me, which was nice. So we had a good chat, catch up with them. It was just nice to have a decent view. I mean, my screen was my monitor was pixelated, so that was no good.
Well, I was more thinking about what the fans look like. I mean, you said about the flags look good. Yeah. But I mean, well, just give us your overview of the support.
Yeah, I mean, I did post a couple of videos of the flag waving and the noise. I just thought we were tremendous. I thought like we. We just, you know, we don't have these days out very often at places like Wembley, and you know, the rights and the wrongs of the semi-finals being at Wembley, which I think we all agree on that they shouldn't be there.
Let's talk about the wrongs here.
They definitely shouldn't be there. I mean, we saw a half-empty Wembley for the semi the day before. But it was, you know, people will be talking about this for years to come. You know, it was.
There were some people on a well-known Brighton chat site who were complaining that we didn't really sing very much, or that there was the people in the safe standing areas weren't singing, and it was a terrible venue. No, I mean, I wasn't aware of that at all. You know, I was up.
No,
in,
definitely not. It was very loud,
fairly high up, and it seemed pretty good to me.
Yeah, likewise. I was in the fifth row of the top tier. And in terms of where the camera is, to the left of it, obviously all the Brighton fans are to the left, and in a line where it was probably just behind the goal line. So it was a good view of everything, except the people obviously directly below me. And I could see across to the press box. I was just wondering what it was you could see. I know I could see the press box across there. But again, you're looking on the top tier. You'll see flags everywhere. You see people shouting. They had a rendition of Sussex by the Sea played out over the tannoy just before kickoff. It was wonderfully sung because we got into place before them. The Man U fans, you know, being as plastic as they are, just took their time to mould themselves into their seats. I thought that as a club, you know, with a fan base, we made a very good account of ourselves. The team on the pitch didn't embarrass themselves. They gave a good account of themselves. It's knowing full well that they could maybe have done better that I think is upset so many people. But, you know, none of those players, and I include Solly March in this, let us down. You know, March had a reasonable game. So, you know, for all the criticism, and I say Dennis and Dav got a fair bit of criticism for, you know, a wonderful move that he completely and utterly cocked up at the end of it. You know, this is sort of wonderful, sort of flowing, bang, 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 and then sort of couldn't trap a bag of cement type thing.
The problem with Undav is, there's a player there waiting to get out, but at the moment his second touch is a tackle.
Yeah, but that'll come. You know, of all people that's going to get something out of him, the willingness to learn, I don't think there's an issue with his attitude, you know. And if that happens to mean that we find someone better, then so be it. But in the meantime, you know, it's incumbent on the management to make him better. So, you know, the come the new season, let's see what the new Undav looks like. But for now, you know, hey, the grief that, you know, the kiddie in front of me was giving Undav as he was about to take his penalty, and then he absolutely, you know, mullers it into the net. You know, he was almost annoyed, and I'm thinking, this is not the kind of attitude that we really want to have, is it? I mean, I'm amazing.
It's the entitled ones, isn't it? The people who haven't, you know, don't remember that 20 years ago we were looking at a trip to Grimsby to try and keep ourselves in the Championship and failing, and whatever, however many years it was ago. Yesterday we were playing the last game at the Goldstone. You know, we should be enjoying every second of all this and thinking, you know, instead of moaning about how difficult Wembley is to get to, just think, glad we're there in an FA Cup semi-final, not a sort of Championship or, you know, League Two playoff final or something.
Yeah. Sorry, as a quick one to get on to AD's point here, I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway, Nick. Should the semi-final be at Wembley?
No, but they've got to get the crowds in to pay for it, so it's going to be.
Yes. But that was what they said originally, but this is like 20 years later.
the costs, you know, the way it was funded, no, it's going to be there forever.
Yeah, it's a shame. But anyway, like I said, going back to your other point there, Nick, I mean, like I said at the top of the show, this is we're on the cusp of our greatest ever season. So,
interestingly, we're still favourites to finish in the top six with one well-known bookmaker.
Good. Well, I mean, therein lies the point. I mean, it's the Nottingham Forest game, and again, we'll get to it presently, seems to have changed a lot of people's perception of what we can be and what we can do. What was clear was that team was absolutely knackered. I mean, after 60 minutes, you could see they were dead on their feet.
Okay.
But from here on in, I mean, obviously, like I say, AD, we'll talk about the game in more detail. But it then leads to another point. We're playing Wolves on Saturday, only 3 days after having played another game. And the recovery time is going to be absolutely paramount. And that's my main worry. You know, if people wanted a good cup run, that means that fixtures get sort of concertinaed in at the end of the season, and something has to give.
And we'll come to that very shortly. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online on RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and also on Smart Speaker. As ever, this show is brought to you in association with OldFootballShirts.com, and Phil has given us a lovely blue and white striped shirt.
I really do love this. I'm going to give it back to Nick, but I absolutely adore this shirt.
I'm going to make a very educated guess. It's a beautiful navy blue and white striped shirt. I'm guessing that the sponsor, which is Eroski, I'm guessing that's Basque. And I'm guessing that it's Real Sociedad, the Royal Society. I could be wrong, but I know they had one or two seasons playing in navy blue and white stripes rather than their normal royal blue and white.
I'm going to guess that I think you're right. It is Basque, basically because of the WhatsApp conversation that myself, AD, and Phil had this week, are saying, Phil, are you going to write shirt of the week? Make sure you do it in Basque, but not in a Basque. And I think that's what he's done. And I'm seeing behind the collar, I see the letters DA. That makes me think Deportivo Alaves. Am I right, Adrian?
You are correct. And you know what? Phil has actually written this in Basque. So here we go. Beste golitzen el bat el glorioso bancor por riacano. He has actually written it in English. Thank God for that. This is the 1997 to 1998 home shirt of Deportivo Alaves, who currently play in the Segunda División of Spanish football. Their nickname is Babazoro, and it is one of the most well-known in Spanish football. The origin comes from the Basque language, and Baba refers to fava beans, a local crop, and Zorro, which means sack. And therefore, the word defines fava bean storage agents, or as they become to be known, fava eaters. Another nickname is El Glorioso, the Glorious One, and they hail from the city of Vitoria Gasteiz in the Álava province in the autonomous community of the Basque County in northern Spain. Home is the 19,840 capacity Mendiz Otsoroza Stadium, and the club was formed in 1921 as Sport Friends and changed their name shortly afterwards to Alaves. They are a historic yo-yo side, and the Babazoro have been relegated and promoted more than 30 times and have spent 17 seasons in the Liga, most recently last season. And they made it to the UEFA Cup final in 2001, losing 4-5 to Liverpool to a golden goal. Do you remember those? Some notable former players include the former Liverpool player and assistant manager Maurizio Pellegrino. I'm not sure he was a Liverpool assistant manager, was he?
I think he was.
And who also managed Southampton for a season in 2017 to 2018. Jordi Cruyff made over 100 appearances for the side between 2000 and 2003. And the Socceroos international legend, John Aloisi, who was there between 2005 and 2007. And he also stepped out in the colours of Portsmouth and Coventry in the late 90s. There are many more links to the UK, but of course, I do have some links to the Albion. Inigo Calderon, of course, joined the Albion from Alaves in 2010 and rapidly became a firm favourite with Dean and then the Amex. And it's understood that many men would let their daughters date Calde, but would be worried that she wasn't good enough for him. And then also Andrea Orlandi began his career with the Alaves B team in 2003. He went on to play for the senior sides before his move to Barcelona, before he switched to the UK with Swansea, and then, of course, to the Albion for two seasons. So thank you for that. Of course, you can see this and many others over at oldfootballshirts.com.
For those who remember Inigo Calderon, and with Nick talking about the entitled ones, not even everyone probably remembers Calderon. Do you remember when he was on the show a few years ago, AD, and he was talking about that Alaves-Liverpool game?
Yeah.
And he has, because he was part of the squad at the time, although he wasn't part of the team, They played in a shirt that was basically Boca Juniors. It was this royal blue with the yellow band across it. And the nature of the shirt was it had, I think, all their season ticket holder names on it, something like that.
This?
Yeah, it's a shirt that really upset Calde because he thinks, hang on, this is Liverpool we're playing here. They're in red. We should be in our traditional blue and white stripes. And like I say, they turned up as Boca Juniors. I think the game was in Dortmund, if I remember correctly. But yeah, so you don't normally see Calde upset. But yes, it was. So that was when he was with us in about 2012, 2013. Like I say, as Phil said there, one of the loveliest people in football. And frankly, it's about time we got him back.
Yep, it would be lovely. I mean, I think he's assistant manager at Alaves at the moment,
yes,
isn't he?
Yeah.
Before we move on, Aidy, can I give you a number?
Yeah, go on then.
44.
44.
What am I referring to? Nick, same question to you.
No idea.
The age was 6 years ago?
No.
My lucky number twice.
The answer is the number of Albion staff lined up on the touchline during the penalty shootout.
Really? Is that how many it was?
It's 44. Someone took a picture of it and I counted it. I think Man U had something like, you know, sort of, I don't know, 15, 16, 18 maybe. And I'm just thinking, if it was a penalty shootout and it had gone wrong, then at least they could have had a fight.
There you go.
Yeah, it's, and you given the size of Adam Brett and the other bloke, you know.
Like I said, they count as two people each. It's,
yeah, that's he's a big medical officer, isn't he?
He is. I mean, I like the fact it's got actually on his T-shirt AB. It's got AB, which incidentally is what he has massive ones of.
Enormous. I mean, that I know medical bags have a lot in them, but that's ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
those are definitely guns for sure.
Do you think actually he's deliberately wearing a T-shirt two sizes too small?
Yeah.
If I had arms like his, I probably would.
One thing I'm not gunning for is talking about the Forest game, but I mean we'll give it a go. Was it after the Lord's Mayor show, boys?
Oh God, yeah.
Well, you know, we got out of jail with the Steele penalty save, and I just know that 36,000 people were thinking, why didn't Steele come on for the penalty shootout at Wembley, given his record with penalty saves? And his was it away to Newport when he saved pretty much every penalty in a shootout?
Yeah, he saved four, I think, in that.
Yeah. But, you know, there we go. And you thought, well, we can either learn from this or not. And you know, we see when we got the goal, we thought, great, but... a hopeless goal to give away. You know, I think it's Warren who on the BBC radio makes the point that, you know, goals go in very cheaply against us, whereas we have to work, you know, bloody hard for every goal we get. And yes, that was just a classic example of that, wasn't it? That in the last minute. Then the second half, the goal that obviously killed us, their second goal. You know, I was just thinking that when things aren't going right for you up front, there's a tendency, the way we play, to just pass and pass and pass. And the pass that Dunk made to Caicedo was for no obvious reason, and it put him in trouble. You know, he didn't take it perfectly. He was robbed, and then, you know, Colwill couldn't get back to their guy who was through. And you just thought after that, well, you know, I suppose we might get back into it, but I think that after that we were shot.
Collectively, they all looked so weary. I mean, you can't even blame one person. Yes, you can say Caicedo. That was a horrible mistake. You know, what on earth was Lewis Dunk doing in the 91st minute, waving his arms around at the corner? You know, I mean, I suppose a real cynic could say, well, Jason Steele shouldn't be beaten in the near post, although that's a phrase I really, really hate. You know, if. But then we're back to Caicedo's... And Ciso's shot that their keeper, who incidentally had a worldie of a game.
They always do against us, don't they?
Yes. Mitomar, you know.
Apart from our goal, we should point out.
So, you know, again, yeah. Mitomar's miss. You know, after a lovely flowing move, it's not as though we were rubbish. I mean, for a lot of that game, we controlled it. It's just after 60 minutes or however what time that Danilo goal was. That's the one that knocked the stuffing out of the wind out of their, whatever the metaphor is.
And we still had chances after that, though, Al. I mean,
yes, we did.
When
I mean,
it was 2-1.
And but for a shirt width, you know, Undav's you know, far post header. You know, if Dunk hadn't waved his arm and that one, he was sort of started off six inches further back, we get a draw and no one's moaning to the same extent. These are the fine margins that the team has to put up with. That 3-1 scoreline looks horrific. It doesn't reflect the game.
Yeah. I mean, Nick, I know this is very much if and and all that jazz, but I mean, there is a school of thought that says that perhaps maybe if that game was at the Amex after the defeat in the semi, then perhaps the crowd might have given us a little bit more energy and we might have seen a different result. I mean, I don't know how much you can read into that.
Travel to Nottingham, long journey or all of that, possibly. But if you remember what the game was like down here against Nottingham Forest, similar sort of thing, you know, them sort of battling against, against a superior team, lots of people back. I don't know. I'm not really sure whether the point really applies to the Wembley game or this, but I wonder about the playing the back four when there's a way to get, you know, if you play a back three, you get three of our fit players, Webster, Dunk and Colwell into the team. You possibly get wing backs further forward. I just wonder whether, and it would have meant we were perhaps more solid starting a game when players were tired.
So I've really seen that particular Potter type thing under De Zerbi, though, have we?
No, but I mean, he said that, you know, that he'll play whatever formation he feels is the best one. And I think that especially, you know, going away and wanting to keep things solid, which we weren't in the first 10 minutes until we got into our game, is there an argument for going three at the back and using those three central defenders? You know, it seems when we're struggling, you know, with the squad, it seems that if you've got an area where you can play three players who are fit and obviously playing well, as Webster did at Wembley, isn't there a way to find it, you know, or possibly being, we don't need to replace anybody in central midfield. But I was wondering if whether one of those three, any of those three, could go into a defensive midfield role. I don't know. I'm just hallucinating here.
No, hang on, AD, I would say that your point is valid. If you're going to go to a back three, that means then that Gross will go into midfield and then you flooded the midfield a bit more. I've got no problem with Pascal Gross playing at right back. No, he's not the quickest player, but he is the real answer to that whole thing of the first 2 yards is in your head. So he knows where to be, even if someone is going to go then sailing past him. So I've got no problem with him being right back, but frankly, he is a much better talent when he's playing in the middle of midfield. And when you've then got Caicedo and McAllister, who, let's face it, name me a better midfield pairing in the division. I'm sure someone can, but not that much better. But if they're not firing all cylinders, they're not firing on all cylinders. You know, the fact it's only 3 days after Wembley. What do you do? Do you replace those two? Hello, we've got probably, you know, let's say the two of the greatest players, two of the best midfield pairings in the country. And you replace them because they might be a little bit tired. That kind of completely undermines the point of us trying to, you know, of having a bigger squad that, you know, that where the depth isn't there yet.
But when you make substitutions, you know, you play around with the formation sometimes. I mean, taking Estupiñán on, you know, means a change in personnel, people in odd positions. You know, he's obviously got no faith at all in Gilmore, you know, he'll play almost anybody ahead of him. Mm. So why he's even on the bench, I don't know, when they could put someone else.
There are players.
I mean, you know, if you want to play, you know, Imari Samuels in the under-21s is having great game after great game, you know, possibly better than, you know, some of the players who are on the bench. But, you know, OK, maybe it's he's never been in the squad, so perhaps it's too early to give him a look in. But
is Andrew Morant still here or is he on loan?
No, he's still here.
OK.
Who's that, sorry?
Andrew Morant.
He's just signed a new contract. So
yeah, but I wasn't sure if he was out on loan or anything. Or, you know,
he's not been involved as often as. I mean, the squad. I mean, people are saying that is looking a little bit threadbare at the moment. I mean, obviously the injuries have taken their toll. You know, would have been nice to have someone like Lamptey at Wembley to bring on, or or Lallana. I mean, they're coming back.
Yeah, Jakub Modera, I guess we won't see him this season. Will we see Sarmiento?
Who knows? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that is quite an injury list, and you know, I think it's actually a little bit harsh to say that there's no squad depth, and I think we have to go back to, and I do have to ask for some perspective here from those people who are really badly complaining about it. Is that you go back to August and what our intentions and ambitions were? Yeah, we finished the season, you know, really, really well. And I remember you saying on the Raw, AD, you know, you're sad that the season was finishing there and then, because, you know, we were hitting our stride. So, okay, we start the season really well, and I don't think we've spent a moment outside the top 10 this season. So, you know, it's not exactly taking everyone by surprise. I mean, it's more to do with the fact that we are fulfilling so many of our goals. I mean, we're on 75 this season already. So we're fulfilling so many of the things we've been aspiring to achieve. And with the entire club punching above its weight and the team being so much greater than the sum of its parts, that actually the quality of the results is outstripping the quality of the squad. And so there's got to be a catch-up. But let's face it, we're doing so much better than the squad itself really does give credit for.
Are you saying we've reverted to the mean then?
Reverted to the what, sorry?
Reverted to the mean, the squad that we've got and the players that we've got. Are we reverting to where you would possibly see us maybe last season or this season? Are we punching above our weight?
What I mean. Yeah, I mean, I'd love us to have the similar run in that we had last season. You know, that would actually, you know, really finish the season brilliantly. You look at who we got left on the run in, and some of it is actually quite frightening. But what we didn't have last season was the last few games concertinaed. You know, we had some games postponed at the beginning of the season. We had the World Cup. We've had a really good cup run, and this is what you get for it. And it's only, yeah. I mean, only the Big Six who can actually achieve Premier League and cup.
Okay, Nick, I mean, Al's just said that the run-in's frightening with what we've got coming. I don't see it as frightening. I don't think we're scared of anyone, are we?
We're not scared of anyone, but it's the exhaustion that we face. I mean, part of the reason Arsenal have done well this season was that they weren't in Europe. You know, they weren't playing Champions League. You know, and that's always thought to be, you know, a bonus for any team that's like Leicester. You know, they were up against big four teams that were playing in Champions League and everything. But the cup run, you know, is leading to us playing, I think, twice a week for the rest of the season, apart from, I think it was 1 week where we've got a spare move. But on the other hand, we're going to Arsenal, who are going to be desperate, and as they were last season. So we'll, you know, they'll be more nervous than we are. Newcastle, I think we can get something there. The problem is having to play Manchester City in the midweek before the Villa game. I mean, we could all come down to that Villa game. Although I personally think it's between us and Tottenham actually for a European place.
You reckon Villa are going, you reckon they're going to get one of them?
Yes, I think, and with a bit of luck, they'll have got it before we play them.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of an unpleasant thing, because our record against Villa, especially when it comes to crunch games, is, well,
we won up there in lockdown, didn't we? I think it was Solly March scored a goal.
Yeah, he
wasn't in goal-scoring form, so.
And with his right foot.
If we get to that game, the last game of the season, with a chance of Europe, I'll be pretty happy. But as I say, bizarrely, I noticed that we're still favourites to get the top six place above Tottenham on one well-known betting site today, even after the Forest game. So bookies are never wrong, are they?
Okay. Well, let's move on to the good news this week, which is about Evan Ferguson, who hopefully will be available for Saturday at home to Wolves. And he's just signed a new deal that keeps him at the club until 2028, possibly. It's brilliant news, isn't it?
It's very good news, yes. Not entirely surprising. I mean, when you hear all the sort of noise coming out from various players' families about, you know, them moving on and talking to other clubs. There was a bit of a steer I got from hearing that Evan Ferguson's Dad was very, very pleased with the way he'd been looked after at Brighton and his development, and, you know, thinking they'd made definitely the right decision for him coming here rather than to Liverpool. So I think there's quite a lot of satisfaction in the greater Ferguson family about the way he's been developed here. So I'm not entirely surprised that contract extension's happened, but very pleased, of course.
Yeah, and given that he'd actually rejected sort of some of those bigger clubs who had come sniffing around for him, you know, it's almost sort of like, you know, blowing a raspberry or sticking two fingers up at those clubs saying, you know, well, if you wanted my services, I mean, of course, an 18-year-old is not going to be thinking of it in those terms, or I really hope he isn't. But from our point of view, it is actually sticking two fingers up at the other clubs, saying, like, you know, if you look after your kids, this is what the possibility of what you're going to get, rather than if you just, you know, send them out on loan to, you know, Nowheresville and then stick them in the stiffs for the next 6 years. I think that, you know,
also part of that, you know, that whole offer to young players is that you'll be allowed to move on if a great offer comes in that you want to accept. And sadly, you know, if we accept that we're getting these players at fantastic bargain prices, then we also have to accept that there will come a time when we have to let them move on, and also to make room for the ones who are pushing to come up, you know, from underneath as well.
Yeah, clear the pathway. But yeah. Nick, I mean, it's incredible just how quickly Evans become so important to the side, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it. Sort of, there's part of this sort of debunking of the Graham Potter myth that he wanted to bring young players through. He didn't seem to. He gave Ferguson his debut in an impossible situation, 2-0 down at home to Burnley, which I think became 3 while he was waiting to come on. And yet, you know, he seemed to be sort of in two minds about whether to play him or not. And it took him an awful long time to play Caicedo as well. De Zerbi doesn't seem to worry about age, that's for sure. And he's certainly been willing to give players like Ayari a much earlier debut than we would have expected. And, you know, until you give these people a chance, you don't know what they can do. Well, he got the chance. He obviously saw enough of him in his cameo substitution appearance against Arsenal to keep him in the team for Everton. And he's given him that chance to develop. So more power to De Zerbi. I don't know if Potter had still been here, would Evan Ferguson be in the team? Would he be such an important part of our present and future? I don't know.
Well, apparently Graham Potter's teams don't score goals, so, you know.
No, it is in answer to your question from a few minutes ago, yes, it is absolutely brilliant news. I mean, there are people who are going to worry about the fact that we're relying on an 18-year-old. But the upshot is that an 18-year-old hasn't finished their football maturity. They haven't finished learning, or they like to think that every player is going to carry on learning, looking at you, Lallana, all the way through the rest of their career. But we're back to, you know, another football cliche here, is that if you're good enough, you're old enough. And it's frightening to think as to, you know, if he's this good at 18, how good could he be? And it is down to the likes of Brighton, who I think will probably nurture him to a given degree for maybe the next 2 or 3 years, until such time as hopefully...
Don't forget, I mean, you know, for an 18-year-old, he made his debut for his Bohemians against Chelsea when he was 14. Yeah. And apparently it was very annoyed that he hadn't played from the start. you know, in football years, he's a lot older than 18.
Yes.
You know, he's been playing for a long time at decent levels by Irish standards and in our under-21s, which is a good team. And he's been playing with good players and had good coaching around him. And he's been in the squad for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, we should point out as well that Andrew Moran has just signed a new deal as well this week. So that's you know, in terms of his progression, I mean, hopefully he'll be given an opportunity as well. I mean, we should have actually also mentioned, we didn't actually talk about it when we were talking about the Forest game, that Buonanotte was given his full debut and capped it with a goal.
Absolutely.
And looked good, I thought, and started the move and got the ball back and finished with aplomb, I would say. I mean, we've seen plenty of those guys in the past. If that had fallen to Neil Mope, I don't know, it would probably end up in the trend.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, I think that Mitoma might have been wearing Maupay's boots when Renato put it on a plate for him.
Yeah, and don't forget, go on, sorry, go on, Nick.
I thought he's put it slightly behind him. I thought Bernardo's just slightly mishit the pass. But even so, when you saw it from behind the goal, I think Mitoma had the, you know, the goal was that side of the goal was open for him. And he, at one point it looked like it was going in, but just sort of faded past the post. So unlucky on that.
I know he didn't start, but also obviously you had Odulugo Afaya made his debut as well. That's. What was it? Is it Martin Afaya's nephew?
It's his nephew.
Yeah, his nephew. Yeah, Chariots of Fire. Again, another one who's come through the ranks. Probably
interesting. He went on rather than Veltman.
Yes. And therein lies a kind of another point, isn't it? I mean, one he wants to bring on. Probably, I wouldn't mind betting De Zerbi saw that the game was up, because I think he came on after the penalty, didn't he? He saw that the game was up, and he thought, "Well, I'd give him a few minutes." That's the time when you blood players. It's when the game's gone or the game's safe.
Well, the whole business of us being victims of our own success, you know, with the cup run costing, us all these extra games, you know, we're also victims of our own success in that there's fantastically promising players in the under 21s who, if we'd been in mid table, you know, where let's say a small club like Chelsea are or Crystal Palace, we probably would have been putting some of these players in by now. Because there wouldn't be any pressure on the games, and we'd been having a look at Cam Perpignan and as I said before, Imari Samuels, who I think looks a tremendous prospect at left back in the under 21s. Impressed by him every time I see him.
Well, who's the under 21 captain? I think he's played. Was it in the League Cup game? I can see his face. I cannot. Jack Spong.
Yeah,
Spong is another player who I think again has spent a little bit of time on the first team bench, probably with very, very little chance of getting on. But again, another one who hopefully will be, be wearing the first team stripes before long.
Interesting though, some of those people who were given loans before De Zerbi came, and you know, his idea seems to be more to give players minutes rather than send them out on loan. So some of the people who've been out on loan, he hasn't seen well. You know, I'm hoping that Stephen Alzati will come back from his loan and De Zerbi will fall in love with him as I think there's our guy who could step into Caicedo's boots. I think we said this last week as well.
And you've got Adingwa as well over at USG, who's been doing really well over there. And he's going to come out. Hopefully he'll be in the reckoning next season as well. So,
well, actually, you know, if you're going to say about reckoning about USG as being a bellwether as to whether you're successful, I'll throw in Mitoma and Undav.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we should also throw in the USG, the Europa League semi-finalists.
Well, yes.
Quarter-finalists. Were they quarter-final?
No, the point I'm making is that, you know, a decent season at USG doesn't necessarily follow a decent season.
Poor Undav could be playing European football instead of having people shouting at him for his run up to a penalty.
Exactly.
Well, all right. Well, let's look forward to Saturday then. It's our first home game for feels like forever. I think it was the 1st of April, the last. Certainly very, very early April. We haven't played at home for a very long time. And it's the first of three games at home, with Man United following on the following Thursday, then Everton on the following Monday. It's a good chance for us to get our season not back on track, but I mean, we Wolves, their result of the week at the weekend, that season pretty much safe. Not necessarily coming out wearing flip flops, but certainly heading for the beach.
If we're going to use anything, then we've got the hoodoo over them. But the thing that actually worries me most about the game coming up is not the fact that we've got a good record against Wolves, or that even Wolves may or may not be on the beach. It's that it's actually still, again, another 3 days on from a game that the Albion looked absolutely dead on their feet for. And we were just hoping recovery.
For all our hoodoo against Wolves, remember we lost to them 1-0 at home last season, an absolutely dismal game when they produced a performance of S housery that you know dwarfed even the cynicism of Fulham and Aston Villa. So you know, I think they've probably had two or three different managers before, you know, since then. But I just think that West Midlands thing of that Villa and Wolves have of time wasting, throwing themselves at the turf, and No, it was a horrible game last year. I think, I believe we were a few players short, but then of course we might be again this week. So I wouldn't worry about our previous record against Wolves being something to make us complacent. If anything, I think we need to prove something against them.
Well, it looks like we're going to have Ferguson back. Lallana's going to be a few more days of training closer to. Apparently, he was at 80%. This week, so which is why we missed out against Forest, being on the bench. So there's a good chance he could make the bench this week. Veltman was rested at the weekend, so there's a good chance that he will come back in. You know, we've got to look forward to this, and we've got to try. And, you know, I think that somebody is going to pay the penalty for us going out the cup at some point.
Not necessarily, but I think, I mean, if you see...
Let's hope it's Manchester United next Thursday.
That would be beautiful.
Yeah, that would be good.
It'd be interesting, to see if De Zerbi does anything much different.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, the thing is that when there's times when we've just... The way that we've bossed a game, and, you know, we beat West Ham by four, and we stuck four past Everton, and you know full well that those games could have easily been five or six. It could have been against Chelsea. It should have been against Spurs. And so on.
Could have been against Man United.
And exactly. So it's the chances are being created. You know, losing to Forest hasn't made us rubbish overnight. It made us knackered overnight, but it hasn't made us rubbish overnight. And given the nature of the players and knowing what they can do, I mean, they'll be smarting after that game against Forest. And I think Nick is right. There's something to prove, not just the fact it's against Wolves, but they've got to prove it to themselves. And De Zerbi won't let them let up for a second. He may or may not have the ump with the board, but, you know, sorry, it's the board that actually is king here. So I'm not going to sort of hold any sway over local reports about De Zerbi sort of not happy with, you know, squad additions, because, you know, the main squad addition that we got in January scored last night. You know, we've certainly got a good enough squad to carry on the good work that we've done. The fatigue is going to be an issue, probably. But in the great scheme of things, and I'm going to say this, what was it, 5 weeks to the end of the season? Even if we don't make Europe, and I do appreciate Nick's point about being favourites to get there, even if we don't, provided I see or we see an improvement on last season, and I'm talking not just the quality of football, which we clearly have, but the finish, even if that means we're outside Europe, it won't be a disaster. It means that we're still on the right track. You know, did anyone scream that we're going to get European football at the beginning of the season? Highly unlikely. The fact that we've actually spent a lot of this time punching above our weight. Yeah, yeah. It's a shame, having spent a lot of time in the European places, that if we do miss out. But, dear God, you know, this is, you know,
I would put the caveat on this, Al.
With the big resources still.
I would put the caveat on this, Al, because, I mean, obviously we've done tremendously well this season, and hopefully we're going to be on for our highest ever finish in this division. Yeah. Finishing in the European places, it also helps. Well, obviously the momentum is a plus side, but also trying to retain important members of the squad who we know are going to be having their heads turned in the summer. But if we are in some sort of European competition, it might just encourage them to stay for another year. And quite frankly, at the moment, why would you want to leave this team?
Well, absolutely. And all I'd ever
for
say...
For huge amounts of money.
Well, yeah, there is that. Where do I sign?
I've been trying not to tempt fate by working all these things out. My attitude is, let's finish the season strongly, see where we are, and see what it all means.
But that's all we've got time for this week. So thank you, of course, to Alan Wares. Thank you to Nick Trepanic. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, and in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Bye. She does, ooh, she does, yes, she does. And if somebody loved me like she does.
She done me.